Holly Cotton here, and you guys know I'm all about the empowerment. So, anytime I'm able to share someone, empowering people, giving life advice, anything to help us with my hashtag whole team winning, I got to get them on my show. So, I'm super excited to be joined today by Davison Hong. Oh, Davison Hang. It's so funny because now I'm gonna have to make a conscious decision. We were talking before we started, and he was like, "No, just say it how you say it." And I'm like, "Well, I'm from the South, so the way I say it is gonna be like hang, you know." So he's like, "Yeah, roll with that. Let's go with that. I love it. I love it." So you guys, Davison is actually an executive leadership coach. He's going to talk about his books. He's an author. He has courses. He's doing all of these things. In addition to, he has a ton of followers on LinkedIn, and he does these things also to kind of help you grow those social media platforms as well. So he's going to talk to us about all of that, and I'm going to get all the free deets for us. So welcome, Davison.
Thank you so much, Holly. That was a wonderful introduction. And yeah, I mean, congratulations on you've built out quite a following as well. And I know it takes a while to get to that stage, and it's certainly commitment and your fitness journey. So it's always good to be surrounded by brilliant people. So I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. You know, I do a little something too, Davidson. I do a little something too. So what I like to do before we even go into all of the things that you're doing, because of course, like I said, you're doing tons of great things. But what I like to do is I want to find out how the person got from where they are now, like where they started to where they are now. Because one, I think that transition is always an inspiring story, because a lot of people could be where you are, or where you were, and they're like, "Wow, I want to do that," or, "I want to do this." So start, rewind, and tell us the story of Davison.
Yeah, thank you for the space. I think a lot of us that are trying to make it to the next level, like we grew up with humble beginnings. So I grew up without a father most of my life, and it was very difficult. Like growing up, there was a lot of abuse and emotional violence and physical violence. So I didn't really have the best upbringing. So I was always seeking mentorship through like podcasts and listening to people like yourself, right? Like I was always curious. I think I listened to over 1,000 podcast episodes now. So Lewis Howes was the first person, the School of Greatness, that got me into the podcast game. And I was like, whoa, like I get to learn from all these brilliant people. This is so cool. And then when I was in high school, like back in 2005 and 2006, I was like, you know what? Like, I really want to work at LinkedIn because there's this platform where you can literally reach out to anyone. So I would reach out to a lot of these famous podcasters and just be like, hey, like, you've really inspired me. Like, you're doing really good work. And I got inspired by doing that. And that's how I started on like the game of like personal development. And then I was super broke. I think I was making like at the time like $60,000 a year back in like 2017, and I was like, man, like I. And then I put $17,000 on for a year long coaching program, and I was like, at that time, I was like, oh my God, this feels like I'm signing my life away. Like it felt like so much money, but the investment in myself, it was like the first time where I like really processed a lot of my intergenerational trauma, because my parents were refugees from the Vietnam War. And when they came to America, as you know, like my dad was beat by his dad, right? So he doesn't really know, like that's kind of like what it was like back in the day. And then my mom had a lot of her friends died from immigrating to the US, and they were like killed by like Thai pirates, like all kinds of crazy stuff. So growing up as a kid, I was like, oh, I made it about me. Because when you're like 12, 13 years old, you're like, oh, it's all about me, But once I grew older, I realized like, oh, wow, my parents had like a lot of trauma to process. So it's been a long journey, but that's essentially like the Cliff Notes version of it.
And I think that's so interesting. You said that I released a book series for adolescent mental health, and I said that in my little spiel that I did about it. And I said, you know, there's so many of us, and even myself as a parent, you grow up in provider mode and you don't have time to really sit there and speak life into your kids and those teenage years and those young adult years. So I definitely do think that there is this huge disparity, because it's like, wow, you know, and great for the parents who have the social capacity to do it, but unfortunately, that's slim and few. Like, most of these kids and young adults, and you said 12 or 13 is all about me, but I'm like, Davidson, I can tell you there's some 30-year-olds that are still saying, I'm the victim, it's all about me, this is this, you know, everything is against me. So I love that. Okay, so if you guys go to Davidson's website, his title is Your Journey, Our Experience Navigating Success Together. So I kind of want to talk, because again, I'm that way too. I'm all about collaboration. I think that when I realized the importance of networking and navigating, I'm like, oh, wow. I'm networking and collaborating. I was like, wow, look at me. I'm way up here just from being in certain rooms and having that. So tell us about that. Like, how did you decide to hone in on that to be even your website title?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been very fortunate, like having worked at LinkedIn, like working at LinkedIn, I think gave me like the inner workings of like how powerful a network was. So I was very fortunate where I getting into LinkedIn is like very competitive. Like, I think for my role which was an account executive selling LinkedIn Learning, there was like 130 people that they interviewed. So when I finally got into LinkedIn, I was like, oh wow, this is the power of networking. And you know, I would say most of the people there, I'm not gonna lie, like did come from like more prestigious backgrounds where they, you know, they grew up in Silicon Valley, or their parents had MBAs from Harvard and stuff like that, where I grew up from more humble beginnings. But that was when I started to realize like, oh, okay. Like, there's definitely like levels to it, you know, there's like, but I would make it a mission where every day I would have lunch or breakfast with someone new. So I was always like really big into networking. And then I realized like the power of community. And when I was there, I was lucky enough to be very involved with like the Asian leadership groups. And then so we would partner with like the Black and Latinx and all the different leadership groups from all the different organizations. And then I would connect us with like the leadership groups, the minority leadership groups at Google and Amazon and Spotify and all these like big tech companies. And then I would sit back and reflect and like, wow, I was able to get like 5,000 people like towards a common cause. So that was like really what really opened my eyes to like, okay, like networking is actually more important than what you know. It's like really who you know and how you can leverage like people's strengths and weaknesses. So that's why I was always like big into community. And it was like the one thing I was good at too.
Well, there you go. Got to find what comes easy to you that's hard to everyone else. So let me ask you this, Davidson, because now I'm just asking to get some free advice. Okay, because LinkedIn is such an odd sort of, I'm still trying to navigate it myself. Like, I've been on LinkedIn for, I don't know. So I had it like 20 years ago when it first came out and I never used it. And then like my producer a year ago was like, you need to get on LinkedIn. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's such a weird, I don't know. It's like, I don't even understand it. So let me just ask you this. What are some tips for people that are trying to grow a LinkedIn profile? How do you grow those connections? What are some things that are common now that you see people growing that a lot of people just starting off have no idea what to do?
That's funny, because I feel that same way about Instagram. And like, I know you have a pretty big, it's just funny how, you know, you're just more comfortable with what you know, like the communities that you're thriving in. Yeah, it's interesting, because I do think in some ways, like social media is all the same, right? But I do think LinkedIn, people on LinkedIn tend to be like a little bit more buttoned up and like a little bit less like, I hate to say authentic, right? But it's all about the brand and the perception. And it's like, look at me, I got all these promotions, these are all my awards, these are all the nonprofits.
Yes, and that's why I was deterred from it, because I said, I was like, okay, I've been in corporate America my whole life. I mean, I've always had, I'm a nurse, but I have a master's. So I've always been in like management roles. And then, so for me to go on LinkedIn, I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm back in corporate America, you know, like who's got the corner office? I don't know, you know, so it always kind of deterred me because of that. Cause I'm like, oh, here we go with the accolades. But, okay. Yeah. Go back to me, Davison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, having said that, I do think people are craving that, like authenticity. I think every platform goes through its ups and downs, right? Like you can make the argument that, well, like Instagram, you're still showing off like, hey, this is how sexy I look, or these are my vacations. So it's some version of that, but LinkedIn's version is just like, hey, look at me. I have all these cool awards and I donated this many much money to this many charities, right? So, but I do think people are craving that like authenticity and like that realness. So, you know, I'll be crying on LinkedIn sometimes and people are like, holy crap, like, why is this guy crying in front of his 18,000 followers? Like, that's kind of weird, you know? But so if it's some quick advice, I would say, like, just be you and just like, don't like, yes, like it feels like more buttoned up. But at the end of the day, like when I write about, like, it was my sister's birthday 3 days ago, and I wrote about how like we weren't that close growing up because of a lot of the family trauma, but she's transformed so much because I introduced her to this like year-long coaching program and she just finished it. And I just wanted to like acknowledge her transformation. And oh, sorry about that. Hopefully you guys don't hear that, right?
Nope, didn't hear anything.
Okay, good. So I do try to put more like vulnerable, like I think authenticity is like always like what people appreciate. And I think because everyone is so buttoned up, like the people that actually can like get over the hump and like they're able just to be real, like that gets a lot of engagement versus like people that are always like, look at me, like I got a $50,000 raise. Like I think there's definitely still some of that virtue signaling, but I would say, I would argue all the social media platforms have some version of that. Facebook, right? TikTok. Like it's always like, hey, look at me. Like I have the best husband. Hey, look at me. I have like the, you know what I mean? Like there's going to be some, but once you kind of get past that, like LinkedIn, in my opinion, has the best opportunity in terms of like building your own business and like the caliber of people that can afford whatever programs you're selling or whatever. The average salary on LinkedIn is much higher. So, you know, you can sell like a mastermind and I would say LinkedIn probably, in my opinion, has the most budget to be able to do that. If you kind of get past the all the like, hey, look at me, like I'm a managing partner at this law firm. But then once you get past that, people are willing to spend though.
Okay. All right. Duly noted. Duly noted. And I remember I saw this like little meme one time and it was so funny, but because of the accuracy of it, and it had LinkedIn profile picture and it was the person in the suit, you know? And yeah. Then it was like Facebook profile picture and they were like, you know, yeah. And that then it's funny. Like Instagram and they're in like the bikini or whatever. And so, yeah, so I love it. And then Snapchat, they're just like totally naked. So it's so funny. Just the different platforms.
Yeah. It is funny, but there's community, there's money to be made on all the platforms for sure. Like with LinkedIn, I just started like a newsletter and now it's up to like 2,000 subscribers. And I was like, oh, like that's cool that LinkedIn allowed me to create my own newsletter through it, right? So, because I think if I started from scratch, like it would be hard to get to 2,000 subscribers, like right off the bat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you for giving us that intel. And so what I wanted to also kind of go into some of, like you said, the different projects that you have as well. So let's go into, because one of the things that you talk about on your website is your course. And I know a lot of people, either they want to build a course or they don't know, do they have information that's sellable for a course? I know I had a course for my second book and I'm still in awe at how much money I made from this course that I just had somebody from Fiverr build for $200. And I was like, I can't believe I'm still making money off of this little $200 Fiverr investment. So tell us about your course. Tell us about the development of your course. And then also, can you give us some tips about anyone that's thinking about doing a course as well?
I love, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, it is. I mean, and it's partly because you've added so much value to your community that they just want to support you, right? So half of it, I'm sure, like, there's like very tangible value, but half of it, it's like, hey, like, I just want to support her. Like, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I'm sure you have raving fans that, like, no matter what you do, they're like, I'm 100% going to support her, you know?
And I love y'all back. I love y'all back. But yes, enough about me, Davidson. Enough about me.
So it is, to your point, it is very vulnerable to, like, be like, hey, like, I have this, like, nugget or this knowledge that people are willing to spend their hard-earned money for. So I think that initial hump is always, like, very challenging, especially, like, folks like myself that come from, like, humble beginnings, because, you know, sometimes entrepreneurship is scary. Usually when I think entrepreneurship, as you know, I think of, like, white men who look really good, right? Like, mm-hmm. they're 6'5", maybe they're like
Cardone, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's like your typical, like, influencer, right? Like, mm-hmm. those are the guys that are making millions of dollars. So once I kind of got past the hump, like, all right, like, what value? Because I have personally spent $200,000 on personal development myself throughout like 10 years. So a lot of masterminds, a lot of courses. I was like, what is a need that I'm not seeing in the market right now? So I'm like, because I've been in tech sales my whole life, I was like, a lot of these communities, they're good at, like, hey, how do you make more money? But I'm like, but no one really talks about, like, the fulfillment, the purpose side of, like, what do I do every day to, like, actually make me happy? Like, what do I do? So I'm like, okay, so let me create that. So what I did was I just amalgamated, like, the 10 different masterminds I've been a part of. And I was like, let me just take what I enjoyed about each of these and create my own version of that. So they always say, like, steal like an artist, right? Like, everything is always a derivative of something anyways, right? I'm sure with your course, like, you yourself have read like hundreds of books, you've attended all these seminars. You're like, all right, let me solve this one thing that I'm currently not seeing. So that's my advice on how to go about creating your own version of that.
Yes, that's tips. Yes, because that's exactly what I did. I was like, when I decided to write my book day one, I did that. I said, you know what? I've learned all of these things about how to be successful, how to create goals, how to, you know, look at things that I didn't know were even important, daily habits and all, you know, all of these things, your circle. I didn't know anything about a circle. And then when I started listening to people and they were like, who are you surrounded by? That's what your success is. And I'm like, it is right, because I'm not messing with these dummies over here. No, kidding, love y'all. But, you know, it's just like, that was one of the things I said, man, that's so true. Or, you know, having a mindset or daily habits, and, you know, you start implementing those things. And now you were like, oh, I want to give this information, but you should also monetize it as well. So let me ask you this. How did you decide on the pricing for your courses? Because I know that's also something that a lot of people struggle with. And I know people will say, like, you know, don't sell yourself short, but then it's like, how do you determine how valuable you are? So, you know, since this is something that you are kind of in this specialty of, can you give us some advice on that?
Yeah, that's always a tricky one, right? Because people always say, like, the market will, like, tell you, like, what, you know, but for me, I just look back to all the courses that I've paid for and all the seminars, all the retreats, like Tony Robbins in Fiji to Summit of Greatness in Columbus. And then, you know, I've attended like a lot of different ones, and I'm like, okay, so I'm like, Landmark, I paid roughly like $700 to $800 for like the 3-day courses. And then I worked at LinkedIn Learning and Udemy. So I was selling training to all these companies like that had, you know, more training budget. So luckily, because I come from the industry, like it helped give me context. And then I worked at a company called Coach Hub, where I was selling executive coaching to leveraging kind of like the Uber model, but with coaches and corporations. So then the coaches had like different ratings. But so I was actively like negotiating pricing. So I saw how much people were willing to pay for coaches. So I do think my advice there is like, yeah, whatever your domain expertise in, like, you'll know, right? And it's always, I'm like, okay, so I spent on average, like, let's say like $25,000 a year on self-development. So I'm like, okay. So that helped me determine the pricing a bit, because it was just like, how much have I personally paid for it? But and then you could also do surveys, like, especially if you have a big community like yourself, people are always willing to answer surveys. People love to, like, feel like they're involved. So, you know, YouTube polls, I'll use that, Facebook polls, you know, Instagram polls, LinkedIn polls. So all these polls help me gather a lot of information.
Okay. Just asking. Just get some little free advice. Okay. So another topic that, or another heading on your website says, discover your path to courage, connection, and authenticity. So can you give us a little bit of the thought process into that? Because we've already kind of talked about the connection part, but let's talk about the courage and the authenticity and why that's important for success.
Yeah, I think courage is, it's easier said than done, right? Like, I'm sure we all want to be courageous. I think Brené Brown was like the first person that like really opened up my eyes to that concept. And I was like, you know, I'm like, there's no like male Brené Brown out there, I feel like. So I'm like, all right, let me try to be like the male Brené Brown, like my version of that, you know? So for me, because I can, it's always like your origin stories is what determines like usually like what you didn't have, what you perceive you didn't have is what you want to kind of solve or give to the world, right? So for me, I was always really afraid because I was always like the only Asian person that in sales, right? Because a lot of like my Asians are usually, hate to stereotype, but are more like technical, maybe they're doctors or they're lawyers or engineers or, you know, data scientists and stuff like that. And because I felt like an imposter my whole life, I was always in boardrooms, like you said, when you're meeting with executives, usually they're like white, middle-aged men that have a lot of gray hair. So I always felt like very like an imposter syndrome. So everywhere I went, I was just like, oh man, why am I the only Asian? And even more specifically, even with Vietnamese, there's not a lot of Viets. So even in the Empire State Building where I worked in New York City, I think there was like 1,000 LinkedIn employees there. I was the only Vietnamese person in that whole New York office, right? So I always felt like a minority. So I think courage is important because, you know, 300 podcast episodes later, like almost 700,000 YouTube subscribers later, it's like I always took courage. I realized like, oh, that's like my unique, because I think everyone has to find their uniqueness. But I was always willing to like take action, have the courage, despite like being the only, you know, there's not a lot of Vietnamese like podcasters out there, not a lot of. So I always tried to do whatever I didn't see, like even all the self-development books I read growing up, like it was usually like white men, right? Like, you know, I don't hate, like, I love Tony Robbins. I love like all these people, Ram Dass,
yeah,
all these
just
people.
Thought, you just realized that there was this absence of having that face. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's why I published like 4 books later. And then I have another one coming out this year. Like, cause I was just like, you know, like it'd be so cool to read like an Asian, more specific, yeah, like an Asian American perspective on things. So that's what inspired me to create all these different things.
I love that. I love that. No, and it's true. And I always say whenever people ask me about being successful or doing things, I don't know. I was born where I wasn't afraid of failure. And so for me, I've always just had that mindset of I can do anything or I'm going to try to do it. And if it's something that I really want to do, if I fail, I'm going to figure out another way to do it. So I didn't realize that wasn't normal until I became an adult and then I'm around other people and I'm like, wait, what? Why are you afraid to start? Or why are you? And so then I was like, wow, okay, so I have to change my mindset because I realized that not everyone feels that way. And a lot of people need that nudging and that push. And like you said, that courage, because they don't have that mindset. So what is something you would recommend as far as someone who is afraid? And what is something that you would tell people to give them courage to either believe in themselves or start something that they want to do?
Well, that's amazing that you have the courage, right? I think that's why you're such a beacon of hope for people, because to your point, like they're probably very inspired by how you're able to take action, how you're able to put yourself out there. And so that's inspiring. Thank you for sharing. That's a great question. I think this is might sound counterintuitive, but I think once we write down all of our fears, our concerns, like all of our complaints, then actually, because we're thinking it subconsciously anyways, right? So that simple exercise is actually helpful because people sometimes when they put in writing, then they're able to see like, oh, okay. And then one of the coaching tools that they teach us is this actually true in the admissible in the court of law, right? So let's just say I write like, I have no friends, like I'm lonely, I'm like, I'm ugly, like I'm short, and I'm like, you know, and there's not a lot of Asians doing what I'm doing. Like, let's say like, those are my fear complaints and all that, right? Then I go to each one of them. So it's like, okay, like, am I actually ugly? Well, it's like, well, no, like I'm not, you know, like it's like these little, so you, once you kind of like unpack the layers, you're like, oh, and it's like, okay, are there like no Asians absolutely at all? I'm like, no, there are, there's maybe like a handful of Asians, not a lot, right? But then once we kind of uncover that, then we realize, oh, actually like all of this is just like made up in my head. So it sounds counterintuitive, but like that usually has helped a lot of my clients like be able to start their own podcast or start their own YouTube channel and things like that, just from that simple exercise.
No, that's great. I say that too. I'm like, what are you afraid of? What is the option? Okay, let me tell you what I'm afraid of: being in the same place I am in next year. Like that's
a good
my
one.
Fear is that I don't care about failing. I care about I'm still doing the same thing year after year after year. That's, to me, that's the ultimate punishment right there.
So. Oh, that's a good. So you just touched on like the number one, like strongest distinction in coaching, which is like we always call it the already always, which is like, if I don't change anything and I'm like, what does that pain feel like a year from now, right? So to your point, like maybe I'm seeking the love of my life, but I'm too afraid to go on dates. It's like, hey, like, let's say you're a 45 year old woman and like, you really want to find the love of your life. Like, it's like, okay, fast forward 5 years. Like, what if you're 50 and you're still, you know, like, and then that's your number one goal. I'm not saying you have to, but like, this, let's say that is your goal. Then it's like, they're like, oh my God, like I would be so sad. Like that would be heartbreaking. It's like, okay, so let's do something about it. You know?
Okay. Great advice. Look at that. See, that's why we knew Dennis, and we knew we were zinning. I love it. I love it. Okay. So last point that I want to talk about is your books, because I know you did say that you have another one coming out as well as you already have. So go through the process. Tell us a little bit about each of your books and then also the next big project for Davidson.
Oh, thank you for the space. So the first book was called The Great Pause, and then also created The Journaling Guide. And this was a very confronting book for me, because like, as someone who was like always emceeing events and was coordinating, I was like the mayor at LinkedIn in New York City, right? So to go, it was just like how to slow down and just to be with yourself. So we created that book because we saw that in New York City, like everyone was like, go, 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 like, let's go, let's get the next, let's get it like every day. And then, so that book will help you kind of like slow down and just be more intentional with your life. And then the third book was called Redefining Masculinity, which I noticed as a person of color that there wasn't a lot of places for us to like process a lot of these like deep intergenerational trauma. So I created this book to show perspective on all these different men that have gone through like the various stages of life. So what it was like to be a grandfather, what it was like to travel the world, to be biracial, to be bisexual, just to have different perspectives, just to connect us and just to show like, hey, it's okay to show emotions. It's okay to cry as a man. So that coincided with a lot of the men's group work that I was creating, that I was doing. And then the last one is called Unapologetically ENFP, which is about how to have more fun in life. And it's basically a book to have acceptance within yourself and to love yourself unconditionally, like especially the flaws, especially the imperfections, like that's what makes us human. So I was really, really proud of that, just to have a space for people to laugh about their mistakes and to process some of their deep rooted like insecurities. And then the next one that's coming out is it's like Adventures of a People Pleasing Contrarian. So it's like, it's a little bit about how a lot of us like people please in general, like whether it's like, oh, I have to do this because my mom wants me to like come hang out. And so it's just the how to have more balance in your life, how to set boundaries, like, you know, and have inner peace within ourselves. But then the contrarian part is like, all right, how do I like be a little bit more polarizing and actually speak my mind with it, you know, and not offend. And it's okay to offend people, but how do I like put myself out there and have a life that is you know, a life that sings essentially. So those are the projects I've been working on, and very happy because it touches upon a lot of different things I'm passionate about.
Yes. And I love that. And it's so funny. It's like the, and I think it's so funny because as the same sort of thing, like my first book was about my, it was my autobiography about going through cancer. And so then I'm like, okay, now I've moved on from cancer. Now we're going to do this. Now I'm in entrepreneur mode. So now I want to share all these things that I have. Now I'm doing, so I think it's so funny whenever you have those, those types of books that have been authored compared to an actual author, like say James Patterson, you know, he's going to write books about serial killers and, you know what I'm saying? Compared to like a fiction writer, I think it's funny because we all have these stages and then it's like, oh, but I want to share this, or this is knowledge that I have now, or, oh, now I'm in this space, so I want to do that. So I love that. Okay. So for anyone that is watching and listening, tell everyone how they can find you, like, subscribe, support you, all of that great stuff.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm all over all the social media. So you can just search my name, Davidson Hang. And it's pretty hard to miss me. I would say I post every day. So like Holly has mentioned, LinkedIn, I would say was like my first true love just because I worked at LinkedIn. And that's where I really found my confidence and was like, oh, like this is cool. Like I'm building this amazing community. YouTube has been my like latest venture where I really enjoy like YouTube because I think it's like one of the hardest skills to master. It's hard to truly ever master, right? Because there's just so many people that are just so talented on there. And then I would say Facebook is probably my third love where I feel like Facebook, I'm the most authentic, like most vulnerable, where I just like show up and I feel like I'm not overthinking anything. So yeah, any of those platforms you could find me.
Okay, good. And your website is what?
Oh, yep. It's just my name, davidsonhang.com.
Okay, perfect. All right. And I will also have, if you guys scroll to the podcast notes, I'll always put clickable links in there as well. So I'll have Davidson's website information in the podcast notes. So scroll down. Don't send me a message. Don't send me an email. Just look in the podcast notes. I have all the information there. So thank you so much, Davidson, for sharing your story and inspiring us. And hopefully we have some people that maybe they were thinking about doing something and you gave them some inspiration to go be great. So I love that. Thank you.